For the first time in his career, Ravens star Lamar Jackson missed his second straight practice yesterday with a knee injury. Now, a source previously told Adam Schefter that the injury is not serious and that Jackson is expected to play against the Bengals Sunday in Baltimore. Max, all this being said, would you still say that Baltimore is too dependent on Lamar Jackson for their success?
No, not at all. Too dependent? No. And let me backtrack a little bit. Like, do you think, like, the Cleveland Browns look pretty good right now. Do you think they would trade teams with the Baltimore Ravens if they could? I think they would. Do you think they would trade fortunes with the Baltimore Ravens over the last, you know, since the Browns relocated and changed their name? I think they would. And the difference was Ozzie Newsome, who was a multiple-time All-Pro player and a first-round draft pick and everything, and moved with the team to Baltimore and became the first African-American GM in the history of the NFL and was responsible for some great Baltimore Ravens teams, and basically with his last act as GM, while many were saying, hey, Lamar Jackson should be a wideout or change positions, he said, no, I'm going to use a first-round pick on that dude. He's going to be the quarterback. And rather than trying to fit a round peg in a square hole, right? He was like, no, we're going to take this guy and we're going to build a team around him. He can do some things no one else can do. So did Ozzie Newsome construct the team where it's really hard to replace the quarterback, where the risk of if something happens to Lamar Jackson, it's more difficult to kind of keep your head above water with another guy because he can do things no one else can do? Yes, he did. And that's a risk, sure. It's harder to find a backup quarterback for this team. But in terms of the actual play on the field, are they too reliant? No. They run, but Orlovsky breaks this down all the time. They run these three tight end sets. They have an offense that works. It's come up short in the playoffs, and it's come up short against Kansas City. And I think those are in those highest profile games, two in the playoffs, three against Kansas City. They're 0-5. I think that has to do with, frankly, coaching, execution, and Lamar Jackson. I think all three of those things have to get better when it matters most for this team. But that's not the same thing as saying they're too reliant on this generationally unique and talented player. Stephen A., they've constructed the team around taking advantage of what he can do rather than trying to force him to be a different kind of quarterback, which is a mistake many teams have made with unique talents through the years. Ozzie Newsome and the Ravens did not make that mistake. They did it the right way.
Well, forcing him to be something he's not would be a problem. But asking him to elevate his level of play is not a problem. The reality of the situation is you've got him sitting out the last couple of practices because of a knee injury. The Baltimore Ravens have the number three rushing attack in football. We know why that is. It's because of Lamar Jackson. That's why they were number one last year. He's not only their leading rusher in yards, he's their leading rusher in attempts, averaging nearly four a game. You got Mark Ingram in the backfield averaging 4.4 yards a carry. Why not give him the damn football more? Why is he averaging less carries as a running back out of the backfield than Lamar Jackson? That's the kind of thing that you should be concerned about. We're looking at a Willie Snead. We're looking at a Hollywood Brown. We're looking at a Mark Andrews and guys like that, Miles Boykin and stuff like that. These are not all-world receivers, even though Mark Andrews is pretty damn good as a tight end. The bottom line is when you look at the Baltimore Ravens, okay, we've got question marks about the amount of weapons that Lamar Jackson and John Harbaugh have available to them because we haven't seen much from them, at least compared to what we had hoped. And primarily, that's because you've got this kid running the football. Obviously, he's an electrifying talent, and you want to utilize that to your advantage. You want to create panic by opposing defenses because of this dude's elusivity and his ability to run with the football. But in the same breath, you want to protect him. Why? Because a backup on your squad was somebody that was considered potentially electrifying. He was number two in the draft behind Andrew Luck. I'm talking about RG3, Robert Griffin III. And when did his career take a turn for the worse? When he damn near had his leg amputated by Haloti Ngata. In a regular season game against the Baltimore Ravens.
And so we've got to pay attention. Leaving him in. Yep.
Say what?
In the playoffs.
You interrupted. I didn't understand you. What'd you say?
I'm saying, like, part of RG3's problem is he was such a gamer, he talked coach into letting him play when he really shouldn't have been playing.
Well, that's part of the problem, but where it really, really started was that hit by Haloti Ngata. And that's all I'm saying is that was with him running the football. And so as a result, once he sustained that injury, then he tried to go to Mike Shanahan and tell him what he wanted to do, and then obviously everything went awry. The point is that even though you're electrifying running the football. In this NFL, particularly when you're relatively undersized, it could be hazardous to your health. And so when I look at the Ravens, do I think they're too dependent on Lamar Jackson? Yes, because even though you know what he can do and you want him to do it, I think you could be asking him to do that a little bit too much and not utilizing the other weapons around you, which could ultimately jeopardize him. And that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. That many rushing attempts could absolutely jeopardize the longevity of Lamar Jackson's career. But, guys, he really is something special. He has more than 2,100 career rushing yards. That is more than Drew Brees and Tom Brady combined, and they have played a total of 569 games between the two of them. So it's pretty crazy just to think about.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
The NBA Finals could be over tonight if the Lakers take care of business versus the Heat in Game 5. LeBron is trying to bring the Lakers their 17th NBA title and is making his 10th Finals appearance, yet he still does take some criticism for being donned the King of L.A., but we already know he is ready to prove why he is worthy of all of L.A.'s love tonight. Now, NBA reporter Brian Windhorst joins us now, and Brian, Max and Stephen A., they're waiting to air out their MVP finals picks until after the game, but you have already made your choice. So who you got?
Yeah, well, it's not over yet, so I have to caveat there, but LeBron James is in line to win this MVP. Number one, he's been the best player in the series, even though I know Anthony Davis has played great. He's been the best player consistently throughout the NBA playoffs. And I'm going to give you a reason why he's going to win, even if he wasn't. Because normally during the NBA finals, there's 200 or 300 media members, sometimes up to 400. And the NBA selects 11 of them to vote, and they're sort of dotted faces in the masses. Tonight, those voters are going to be sitting in the room, if the Lakers close it out, with LeBron James. And LeBron is going to look them in the eye, and none of them want that fire if they pick against LeBron. And those votes are made public as well. So that's just the icing on the top of the cake for why he's going to win this award.
Well, let me say this. I say this in all seriousness. I would be ashamed if some reporter is intimidated enough to vote for LeBron just because he's going to be looking in the face. Give a damn if he's looking them in the face. If they don't believe he's MVP, they should say so. But I agree with you. He probably will be MVP because Anthony Davis's no-show in Game 3, I believe, in all likelihood, cost him the MVP of the NBA Finals. With that being said, as somebody who's been covering LeBron James since he's been in high school, my question to you is, where do you rank this championship run compared to the others he's had in his career?
I probably second behind the Cavs 2016. To me, the 2016 championship is one of the great championships in NBA history when you consider all the things that were in play there. And while I will tell you that the San Antonio victory, which was his second win coming back from 3-2 down, that was the famous Ray Allen Game 6 shot. That was 2013. Winning Game 6 and 7 in Miami. LeBron had a brilliant Game 7. That was probably number two to me. But considering this bubble, considering the challenge, I mean, I haven't been there. But in talking to people who were there and listening to LeBron, it's been an incredible, a difficult thing to do to keep their heads above water for 80-some days. Also, that the Lakers win tonight, it's domination. It's 16-4. It's a run like he's really never had before to dominate a playoff run like that. And so in addition to all of that stuff, that plays in as well.
Ryan, I agree with you about probably, let's see how Game 5 plays out, about LeBron's being MVP. And because the NBA also should have, if they're going to do this ridiculous regular season award and then just MVP finals, there should be a postseason MVP. Because that's really where we find out who the best is. And LeBron in every series, when it looked like the other team might be getting some life, right? That scrappy Nuggets team, here they come. Even the Heat in game four, here they come. It was LeBron who set the tempo and kind of kept them down. So I agree with you. It's also second behind the Warriors' victory in 16. Even though he has so many to choose from. We've been talking a lot about AD being his best. Stephen A. will argue Dwayne Wade is his greatest teammate. But in terms of the quality of basketball when he's had them, AD being the best teammate he's ever had. Do you agree with that assessment? And how much is AD to get credit for this run?
I do. I do think it's his best teammate he's had. Certainly his most all-encompassing teammate. Now let's just go back one game to game four. The guy who was killing the Lakers, Jimmy Butler, they had an alternative to LeBron to put on Jimmy Butler on defense. Anthony Davis slowed Jimmy Butler down. He still had a good game. He still scored 22 points. He still was a factor in a close game. But AD essentially held Jimmy Butler down. That's never been an option for LeBron to not have to take the other team's best player and shut them down defensively for an entire game. And also, he has a guy he can rely on to go after last-second shots. Now, he's had that in the past with Kyrie Irving and Dwayne Wade, but the combination of it. And look, let's just be – you don't even need to have an opinion here. LeBron has never had a first-team All-NBA teammate and a first-team All-Defensive teammate. Just by those awards alone, Anthony Davis ranks so far up there. And the fact that LeBron is doing this at age 35 and can use that extra help, especially when he gets run down in some of these games, only magnifies that.
Well, I respectfully disagree with you, Wendy, only from the standpoint that you knowing LeBron as well as you do, covering him for so many years, you know where he was mentally and when he first arrived in Miami, and you know what Dwayne Wade did for him in that regard. And the LeBron James that we ultimately revere and we have on the Mount Rushmore of all of basketball, well, how the hell did you get there? Dwayne Wade has a whole lot to do with that. And that's all I'm saying about that. But I'll ask you this question.
I think both things can be true, though. Both things can be true.
Yeah, both things can be true, yes. I got to ask you this, though. I got to give a lot of credit to Frank Vogel and his staff. I mean, it's one thing to have LeBron and AD and what they do offensively, but we all know the reason why the Lakers have been so successful this year is because of their defense. And that's the one thing that Frank Vogel had at his disposal coming into the job. We all assumed he was just renting the job for a couple of years until they were comfortable giving it to Jason Kidd. We can't say that now, because looking at this team defensively, we harken back to the job Vogel did in Indy with their team and how they were known for their defense when they pushed the Miami Heat with D-Wade and LeBron and Bosch to game sevens on two occasions. My question to you is, looking at this staff, how much credit do you think they deserve?
I think Frank Vogel has done a masterful job. Number one, his temperament, which is calm, cool, collected, and no ego whatsoever, is perfect for this team. It's been perfect for this team since the day he was hired. The day Magic Johnson came on this show, and he had to come on stage a few hours later, and he just shrugged his shoulders and said, no big deal. That has been amazing from day one. His game plans in this series, which have included turning Rajon Rondo into a zone buster, which is a sentence I never would have dreamed of saying, and the strategies he employed to break the Miami Heat zone, the zone that befuddled the Celtics and befuddled excellent coach Brad Stevens, he broke them. And the second thing that he's done is the way that he schemed against the Heat defensively. The Heat have had a couple of good three-point shooting games percentage-wise. A couple of games they shot over 40%, but their volume is way down because he has all of these schemes to blanket Tyler Hero and blanket Duncan Robinson. Yeah, Hero makes shots that are 18 feet in the air. Duncan Robinson is banking shots in from the wing, but it's taking shots like that for those guys to score. Tyler Hero terrorized the Boston Celtics. They couldn't stop him. And so, and you also look at the fact that he lost Avery Bradley. We keep forgetting that. It's months old now. And he was able to use Alex Caruso and put him in a role that made him so valuable. Frank Vogel has been the outright coaching star of these playoffs. You're right, he won't get credit for it, but it's absolutely true.
And Pelinka deserves a lot of credit, too. I was highly critical of Pelinka and some of the things he did, but they have worked out, and he's turned out to be right about it. I wish I could attribute the first time I saw this being discussed online, and it, you read so much stuff, you forget. But it's out there, like this idea of Lakers envy, how that kind of goes around the NBA. You know, you hear it as though it's the Lakers' fault that the Pacific Ocean is right there. Have you been privy to any of this? Wendy, have you heard grumblings about Lakers? They bought a championship or you know, of course, they get LeBron and AD.
Well, I've been alive for 42 years, so yeah, I've been hearing it for about 42 years. You know, Lakers exceptionalism is a thing. It exists. It exists. You know, when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said, I want to play in Los Angeles, when Will Chamberlain said, I want to play in Los Angeles, when Anthony Davis and Shaquille O'Neal said, I'm going to play in Los Angeles, they have an advantage. And it took them a while to take advantage of it, but they did. And to be honest with you, there should be a ring here for Clutch Sports. It's not the first agency who's ever been able to help manufacture a championship. It's not like what Rich Paul is doing has never been done before. But Clutch Sports made this happen. You know, LeBron came to the Lakers even though they had nothing going for them virtually. They recruited Anthony Davis, and then Rich Paul went on a six-month campaign to block every other team from competing with the Lakers for Anthony Davis to deliver his client to L.A. He's got six clients on this Lakers roster. And it doesn't mean that he's only going to send his players to L.A., but he absolutely helped make this happen. So, yes, while I credit Rob Pelinka for putting this team together, absolutely, it is not easy. I also credit Rich Paul for helping clients LeBron James and Anthony Davis get to L.A., and he had to do quite a bit of work to get them there. And let's just be honest, that's one of the reasons they're going to win this title.
And Jeannie Buss, let's give credit where credit's due. KCP got a one-year $17 million contract to take care of those. Obviously, it's not because KCP's a $17 million a year player. It's to lay the groundwork for getting that, you know, to start that real Clutch Sports relationship. Jeannie deserves credit, too.
Well, you can give it to her, and that's fine because she's ultimately responsible for paying the bills. But in the end, I completely agree with Brian about Rich Paul because he deserves it. Let's not forget Magic Johnson because Magic Johnson was there when LeBron came, even though he was coming anyway. Magic Johnson obviously had Anthony Davis in tow, but Dell Demps didn't want to do business with him, but that ultimately was going to happen. And if Magic Johnson was there, they probably would have had Kawhi Leonard, which would not have been fair. But I will close by saying this, Wendy, and you can tell me whether you agree, and I don't think you will disagree. Here's where we have to give Rob Pelinka credit. Kobe Bryant, God rest his soul, loved Rob Pelinka. When we talk about tonight and the Mamba jerseys and all of that stuff, let's all remember Rob Pelinka was Kobe's agent pretty much his entire career. As many times that I spoke to Kobe, he thought that Rob Pelinka was brilliant, thought that Rob Pelinka was smart as a whip, and thought that Rob Pelinka would be an exceptional executive. Credit to Magic Johnson. Just the other day on the air with me and Wilbon on SportsCenter with Stephen A., Magic gave Pelinka credit as well. When we talk about the Lakers, if they win tonight with those Mamba jerseys, we got to remember that that guy, Rob Pelinka, Kobe loved that man. He really, really did.
Yeah, that's very cool. You know, tonight we are going to find.
Had a whole career. Okay.
Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, Rob had a whole career of finding. Yeah, he had a couple of big-time players, guys like Kobe, but he had a whole career of going out and recruiting players like KCP. You know, he didn't represent them, you know, but like, you know, Alex Caruso, finding those guys to represent them because he could see diamonds in the rough. There are several diamonds in the rough that are on this team because of Rob Pelinka, and he deserves credit for that.
Yeah, a lot of history with this cast tonight. We are going to find out if the Lakers can close out this series, bring home a championship. Also, if LeBron is going to win his fourth finals MVP, making him the first player in NBA history to earn the honor with three different teams. So it'll be interesting to watch. Brian, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive.
eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
A big quarterback matchup in the college football game of the week tomorrow night on ABC. Trevor Lawrence and De'Eriq King hoping to put on a show as Clemson takes on Miami. And who better to talk quarterbacks than our quarterback and also our very good friend, Tim Tebow. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Stephen A., you want to say hi?
What's up, brother? How you doing? You good? You good? Blue shirt.
I'm fantastic, man. You looking good. You looking good today. I like the shirt with the coat. Solid.
Blue shirt. Blue
eyes. I mean,
it's
not as fancy as Max and his tie, but it's cool, man. It's cool.
I like to just put on a tie when you go to work.
I could do that.
But, you know, maybe not for everyone.
Well, I definitely missed
Matrix, you ain't even part of this conversation. Max Matrix.
Oh, really? Hey, Tim, remember that time you threw that touchdown pass to beat the Steelers in the playoffs? That was crazy.
He does that on purpose.
I do remember. I remember it sometimes. I
enjoy
it. I'm
just thinking about that. Yeah.
All right, Tim, let's talk about this game. We have Clemson, Canes, Lawrence, King. Tell me, it's a two-part question. What do you expect to see out of these two dynamite quarterbacks? But also, what can we expect to see on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I think both of these guys are fantastic, and both of them are Heisman hopefuls, and they will find a way to make plays and put up points, but I really want to take a look at the other side of the ball because that's what no one's talking about. Both of these defenses are top 12 in the country in efficiency, and I really want to look at the matchup between Rhett Lashley, the OC for Miami, and Brent Venables, the DC for Clemson. This Clemson defense has been good for years. For the last 4 years, only three teams have scored 28 or more against Brent Venables. He is one of the best, if not the best, defensive coordinators in the country. I played against him in the national championship. His game plan was unbelievable. We had to totally regroup in the second half. He is a fantastic coach, and he always shows up in the big game. And these two have matched up in the past. In the first game in 2016 when Auburn faced Clemson and Brent Venables got the better of him then, will he get the better of him tomorrow night? That will be the key in this game. This will come down to game plan because both of them have great players that play great in big situations, but who's going to set their team up to succeed? Offense versus defense. This is what's going to be exciting.
Tim Tebow, help me out here because I don't have the schedule in front of me. Who has Miami beat thus far? Louisville, Florida State. Who is it again? Let me look this up. UAB.
UAB.
These are the people they play, right? Now let me ask you this question: is it true what I read that the last two times these teams have met, the score has been a combined 96-3? Is that true?
Yeah, I think it's
something
like
that. Why should I be excited about this?
It is. That's what it is, 96-3.
96-3. Tim Tebow, tell me why I should be excited about this. Why?
It seems to me.
Stephen A., because people change. Coaches change. Hey, guess what? They got a new quarterback. It's not the old system. It's a new system. It's a new defense. It's an excited Miami. They're playing with passion and enthusiasm. Listen, they've always had speed. They've always had athleticism. Now they're playing together. Now they're playing with chemistry. Now they believe they can win because they got a quarterback that's leading them. Listen, I still think Clemson's a better team. I'm going to give them the edge in this game. But I think Miami is a really good team. I think they're a legit top 10 team. And this quarterback is a fantastic player that not only can beat you with his legs, which everybody talks about, but he's also good from the pocket. And he has been extremely accurate so far this year. And he really hasn't turned the football over. And that will be key in this game. Go ahead.
I said he hasn't thrown a single interception. You're right. He hasn't.
Oh, all right, my turn.
Your
Tim,
turn.
Trevor Lawrence, when he was, 19 or something, had this incredible national championship game. He had that same kind of stuff that Deshaun Watson seemed to have before him, but on top of that was surgical and just dissected Alabama. That doesn't happen. And then going into last year's big game, I thought, okay, Clemson has the edge when it comes down to it. As great a year as Joe Burrow had in this quarterback matchup, boy, I was wrong. And Burrow's a more mature, more advanced player. I get that. But now here's his next, Trevor Lawrence, that is, big matchup. As you mentioned, De'Ara King, a Heisman hopeful at this point, undefeated team, big national attention game. What do you expect to see from Trevor Lawrence in this matchup?
You know what I've been really impressed with this year? This is something that is really hard. When you're at the top of the mountain, it is hard to block out the noise. It is hard to handle the pressure. It is hard not to press, right? Because everyone's comparing you against Deshaun Watson and against what you've done the last couple of years. And they're saying, dude, you need to win the Heisman and you need to blow people away. And it's so hard when that happens not to press. And what I've been so impressed is I haven't seen that from Trevor Lawrence. He has been taking what the defense gives him. He's been poised. He hasn't been forcing anything. Hey, if they need to check it down and didn't get a first down but to set up good field position, he did it. Then he came back. I mean, he's done it with his legs. He's done it with his arm. He's done it with his mind. And I've really seen a calm, cool, collected, not someone that says, you know, I got to go score 70 touchdowns and win the Heisman because that's what everybody expects. No, he's someone right now that's saying, you know what? I'm going to go through my reads. And that's going to be good enough because I'm going to trust my teammates. They're going to do their job. I'm going to do mine. That's what's been impressive for me so far.
All right, well, another game we want to talk about, Alabama. Nick Saban, they're going to visit Ole Miss, who, of course, is coached by former assistant coach of Alabama, Lane Kiffin. We can call it a record that's against Kiffin at this point. Maybe it's more of a curse. There's an 0-20 record that head coaches who have worked under Saban have against them. What does Kiffin need to do to break this curse?
Well, I guess you could say that about every assistant coach that goes somewhere else. They all have a curse then. I guess this is what Saban does to people. But if you look at this Ole Miss team, they're kind of scary, guys. They really are. In two games, they have 9 plays of 30 or more yards. That's the top in the country at that rate. This team is for real. Matt Corral is a really good to exceptional quarterback that is really athletic and is really accurate down the field. Elijah Moore, Kenny Abayu, they got a bunch of weapons out wide. I don't know how they keep recruiting these big-time DK Metcalf type receivers, but they got them. And you got to be, if you're Alabama, you got to hold your breath a little bit. I think Alabama has the edge in this game because they can score and they're really good in the back end. But at the same time, you got to watch these guys and say, this offense, it is scary. Florida found that out 2 weeks ago, by the way.
You know what? I'm going to start calling you the young Dick Vitale. I mean, you can promote something, brother. You promoting this footballer, and they don't have a chance against Alabama. They going to get stomped. Nick Saban's going to roll right over them. I'm saying it on national television right now. And you know why his assistants suffer when they go up against Nick Saban? Because usually when they leave, listen, he don't mind you going someplace to get another job, but build your own damn staff instead of trying to come back to his staff and take people from his staff. When you do that and you disrespect greatness the way they have tried with Nick Saban, they end up suffering the consequences. Ole Miss is going to get stomped. Tim Tebow, I understand the nation, he's doing a great, great job covering college football and promoting it the way that you do. They don't have a chance. Just stop it, okay? Just stop
Alabama's
it.
Alabama's flying under the radar somehow.
Probably Alabama. He ain't going to have no problem with Ole Miss. Man, stop it. Stop it, Tim Tebow. Stop it.
You need to be careful with this Ole Miss offense. Hey, their defense, they're not going to stop Alabama a lot. I agree with that. But their offense, it's a good offense.
Bill Belichick's assistants don't do anything against Belichick or the rest of the league in the NFL either. Maybe Nick Saban's assistants need to go to high school football or something.
I mean, these guys, they got to venture out on their own, though. What do you expect them to do? I mean, Nick Saban on a completely different level. But
Charlie, we didn't even get into the Red River rivalry because nobody's caring about that the way Oklahoma and Texas look right now. We ain't even getting to that.
That's what happens when you lose.
There's just too much to talk about. There's a lot of great games this weekend. We'll be watching all of them. Tim, thank you so much.
Ole Miss, I'm sorry.
Thank you, guys.
You going down.
Appreciate it.
You going down.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Yeah, this game was worth staying up for last night. Nick Foles started a bit slow. He missed a few open receivers, but next thing you know, bam, transforming into Super Bowl 52, Nick Foles completing 30 of 42 passes for 243 yards and a touchdown in the Bears' 20-19 win, doing so in his second start since replacing Mitchell Trubisky. Now, Max, we're going to look ahead a little bit, but based on what you saw last night from Foles, would you say he has enough to give the Bears what they need to lead them to the Super Bowl?
Yes, they are. You can't rule out a Super Bowl for the Bears. Not, they're not like among my top two or three favorites to win, but with Nick Foles at quarterback, if that clavicle holds up, right, if he doesn't get re-injured, I think they have a chance to win a Super Bowl. Look, the history of the Chicago Bears has not been great quarterbacks. Even when they won in 85 when I was a kid, they had a good enough quarterback. It's not like they had a great one. They don't do a good job there, and maybe it's the weather or the team's philosophy or whatever it is. But the Bears in the modern NFL, in modern NFL history, have one of the most overrated traditions, right? Like, what have they done? Well, but what do they have the chance to do now? They have a defense that's good and has the potential to be really good. And at quarterback, they replaced Mitch Trubisky, who, with all young athletic quarterbacks who can, like, outrun linebackers, the question is, can they be accurate down the field? Trubisky, the answer is no, right? We see Lamar Jackson can be, although we can debate that. Josh Allen can be. Trubisky, no. And so they replaced him with a guy who, last night early on notwithstanding, can be. He's shown the ability to be. Overall, Nick Foles is an average NFL starter. So he's heavily dependent on coaching. When he had Chip Kelly, 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Jeff Fisher, he was terrible, right? Dependent on coaching. He's not independently amazing. But now he's back with John DeFilippo, who was his quarterback's coach when he won Super Bowl MVP. What is Nick Foles? He's an NFL average starter who, when you need him most, plays like a star, believes in himself, believes in his teammates. Guys like to play with him. He never gives up. And because of that, in big moments, he has consistently been able to deliver. Stephen A., health is the issue with him. It has been. I'm not pretending he's a superstar quarterback at all times. But if you're a solid, average NFL starter and you can be big when it matters most, your team has a chance if they got a defense, and that's what this Chicago Bears team is.
Well, Max, that's not the point I disagree with you about. What I disagree with you about is that if you're willing to say yes about two or three teams, or, you know, three or four teams that come ahead of them, then I don't consider that being much of a chance. That's where we differ. I get how you're classifying it, and we don't disagree there. Nick Foles is a Super Bowl champion. He plays well under pressurized situations, although he's relatively inconsistent as a starter because he's considered an average starter. I'm thinking about the over-reliance on Allen Robinson, per se, the absence of a stout running game, Tariq Cohen being out, and that doesn't help matters. I get all of that. Now, defensively, they are the real deal. When you talk about Khalil Mack and Raekwon Smith and Vaughters and Eddie Jackson and these boys, they are no joke. Make no mistake about it. They got the experience, they got the talent, they got the cachet, and more importantly, I think any team that has a front four that can pressure the quarterback is definitely a lethal defensive team to keep in mind, because they don't have to sit up there and blitz you all day long. If they need only four guys to get to the quarterback, that means you got seven cats in the secondary to neutralize your passing attack. And I think that ultimately, particularly as the games go on, especially if you get home field advantage with or without a crowd, having to go to the Windy City to play a playoff game is an impediment to anybody, as far as I'm concerned, outside of Aaron Rodgers, who's accustomed to playing at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. But in the end, I'm able to look at New Orleans. I'm able to look at Green Bay. I'm able to look at anybody in the NFC West outside of Arizona. I'm talking about L.A., Seattle, or San Francisco, assuming that they stay healthy, that George Kittle gets himself healthy. I know he's played, but to get himself close to 100%, Deebo Samuel the same way, Jimmy Garoppolo back. If all of those things happen, I think that, you know what, Chicago is like a distant fourth. That's my issue. I'm not saying they can't beat those teams, but based on what you're talking about, all I'm saying is if I got three teams, Max, where you and I disagree, if I got three teams that I can look at and I can say, excuse me, they got a better shot, then I look at you as a playoff team, but not one that I assume
we're on the same page there.
Is going to be in the Super Bowl. I don't look at
we're on the same page there, but with one major difference. You know,
okay.
I mean, Eli Manning, think of him as Nick Foles, but his health held up. And that's a big difference when you're reliably there all the time.
That's a good
one.
There
were a bunch of teams in 07 and 11 you'd have taken before the Giants, but they had a special guy under center in the biggest moments, kind of league average otherwise, in the biggest moments, all-time great. You bring up Soldier Field and the weather. That's why a couple seasons ago, the Bears were like a strong kind of whisper campaign, but like you heard it a lot. The Bears might come out of the NFC. You know, with that defense, people having to go to Soldier Field, right? But guess who went to Soldier Field and beat them? After winning Super Bowl MVP, Wentz gets the job back over Foles. Gets hurt again. The Eagles were going nowhere. Foles takes over. They wind up in the playoffs. They travel to Soldier Field. They beat the Bears at Soldier Field. And they almost did it to the Saints at New Orleans. Now the Bears have that guy. A lot of the same pieces on defense, but now they have the guy who comes up big in the biggest moments. Put Nick Foles on that Bears team the year that Foles stopped them. And what do the Bears do? They might make a run. In fact, I think they would have made a run. Who knows how far they got, they would have gotten, but they'd have been very live. And that's what I'm saying now. They are very live.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that. I mean, if that's your definition of it, they're very live, okay, I'm with you. I'm with you. All I'm saying is that I got three teams easily that I can look at and say I'd give them a better chance. Because and the thing that makes me want to change my mind, want to modify my thinking, is not Nick Foles. It's that defense. It's that defense.
Okay, let me ask you this.
And it's the possibility that their better record might put games in the Windy City in January. Those are the two components I think about before I even get to Nick Foles.
Well, then you made the same point about Jimmy G in last year's Super Bowl, and you turned out to be right because he didn't hit the ultimate pass to Emmanuel Sanders, and then Patrick Mahomes did. And I'm not claiming Nick Foles has Aaron Rodgers' talent. And I'm with you. I'll take Green Bay over Chicago, right? In the division, in the play, whatever, I'll take Aaron Rodgers-led team when he's playing like this and it's a well-coached team over Nick Foles and the Bears. But I'll tell you this, Stephen A., I know you're an Aaron Rodgers fan, and I know you'd be rooting for him if they linked up with the Bears. And let me ask you, as a fan, what are you thinking about? Are you a little extra nervous if they play the Bears? If they had to go to Soldier Field.
Because of the defense, not
really?
Nick Foles.
Really?
Not Nick Foles.
Really? Nick Foles? Because I would be petrified if I were a fan of Green Bay and I'm watching in a tight game and Nick Foles has the ball at the end of the game. I'm thinking,
yeah, but that's the difference between me and you. I don't expect it to be tight. If Aaron Rodgers, if I see Aaron Rodgers, all right, and that offense is clicking, I don't expect it to be tight. That's my point.
Remember
I don't
when
anticipate
Aaron Rodgers
tight, but the defense of the Chicago Bears cannot be ignored. All I'm saying is I'm thinking about the defense and inclement weather before I think about anything about Nick Foles.
I'm not saying
you can neutralize Nick Foles to some degree. I think that Nick Foles can give you about 20 points or whatever, but him dropping 40 like he did against the Patriots in the Super Bowl, I don't see that happening.
That style quarterback needs to play with a real good defense, but the Bears have a chance to be a real good defense. And I know he's not Eli Manning.
I think they are
already. I think they're good, but I think they have a chance to be even better. I don't think they performed up to their potential. But I know he's not Eli Manning. I know it's not the same guy, but it's the same type. Yeah, he's all right. I'm thinking more about the defense. I'm thinking until it matters most. And Eli went to Lambeau and beat Aaron Rodgers there behind a good defense. And Nick Foles is that same kind of cat.
All right, well, Stephen A., doesn't seem like you'd be worried about Nick Foles. He did have an incredible game last night. If we're going to talk about their chances of making the Super Bowl, according to FBI, they have a 2% chance. Actually winning the Super Bowl, a 0.5% chance. But, hey.
So you're saying there's a chance.
They're saying there's a chance. That's right.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
What do you say? Let's get to a couple of other NFL games, starting with the Eagles at the Steelers. Philly and 1-2 in the lead in the NFC East, while Pittsburgh is 3-0 and atop the AFC North. And now with that, we welcome in NFL analyst Rob Ninkovich to help break down these games. Max, I'm going to start with you here. Is this game a must win for the Eagles?
No, a must win for the Eagles? Let me just remind everyone, they have one win in four games. They're sitting alone in first place in the worst division of all time.
The worst.
By the way, Cowboys and Giants play? Understand, even if the Cowboys win, they're a half game in front of the Eagles. If the Eagles lose and if the Giants win, the Eagles will still be alone in first place. No, this isn't
ridiculous.
Must win. It's hilarious is what it is.
Well, for me, I think differently, only from this standpoint. I think that the Eagles have looked bad. And when we look at them, particularly when it comes to Carson Wentz, we've got so many questions about them right now. I don't think you can afford to go 1-3-1 because I think they're nosediving. I think that, you know, usually when you see the awfulness of the division or what have you, even in the past when the Dallas Cowboys were struggling, predictably so, and the Eagles end up pulling themselves out of whatever abyss they were in, you know, you saw so many different signs of things that, you know, were working for them in a positive way. A play here or there didn't go right, or one individual was struggling. But when you what you see them now collectively with the slew of injuries, the inconsistent play of Carson Wentz, the fact that you've got players not necessarily believing in him the way that they once did, you don't have the security blanket that was Nick Foles in the past. I think the combination of all of those things make a game like this much, much more important, because I think that somehow, some way, particularly considering the pandemic, the fact that you don't have the crowd there to really inspire you, to really lift yourself up when you're struggling the way that they've been struggling, all of these kind of things that have been going on, particularly with Jalen Hurts not necessarily being ready, because when he's been utilized thus far this season in his young career, he hasn't been that effective. The combination of all those different things, I think, elevate the level of importance for them to win a game like this against the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's just my thinking.
Rob?
Yeah, look, I mean, definitely the Eagles. It's a must-win game for them. And look, every game's a must-win game, especially, look, you know that the game is physical. We all know the game is physical, but it's more so mental and confidence for Wentz to go out there and play a good game and get back some of that confidence that I feel like he has lost. It's vital for that team. And we know the division's a joke. We know whoever wins that division is probably going to be one and done in the playoffs because it's ridiculous right now. So definitely is a must-win for the Eagles. They have to go out there and try to put together some type of game for four quarters.
Wait a minute. Rob, if they're all must-wins, then they're none of them are must-wins. By must-win, we obviously mean it has special significance. And we know if the Eagles make the playoffs, they're one and done anyway. So, like, anyone out of the NFC East ain't doing anything in the playoffs this year. So the question is, if it's a must-win, does losing the game mean they've really hurt their playoff chances? And the answer is no. They could have one win in their first five games. Think about this. They could still be sitting alone in first place. It's unbelievable how bad this division
is. It's unbelievable how bad it is, Max. I don't disagree with you. But what I'm saying is, as we look at the Philadelphia Eagles right now, think about Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
He's got four touchdowns, seven interceptions, and completing 60% of his passes. I mean, this is just bad. It's one thing when we looked at them and we said, okay, he's playing with a guy that used to be a quarterback in college, but now he's a wide receiver. This guy was on the practice squad. He got off the practice squad. DeSean Jackson's out. Nelson Aguilar's out at the time. Alshon Jeffrey is out at the time. All right, et cetera, et cetera. Now you've got a situation where you still have a plethora of injuries that have ravaged you, combined with the quarterback simply not not playing well and not exuding the level of confidence that he wants exuded. And then you got teammates that are not believing in him. The kind of stories that we've been hearing, they're not on the same page. You yourself, Max, even highlighted how when you look at Doug Peterson, the thing about it is that Nick Foles was deemed as being coachable. You know, sort of as Carson Wentz was a maverick, would go his own way, would audible, would try to do his own thing, try to play hero ball, et cetera, et cetera. Those kind of things seem to have worn. And when you see something happening continuously year after year after year and regression taking place before our very eyes, it does get to a point where it ain't even about the division. It's not about the competition. It's not about whether or not you make the playoffs or not, because the people that you share the division with are all equally awful, if not worse. It really comes down to you and who you are as a franchise. And I'm saying the reason why this game is important, because I think we're seeing the Eagles go this way.
Yeah.
And I think they need something to lift them up to their level of own respectability. And if you don't get that, you're just going to nosedive. That's all I mean by that.
Yeah, Rob, I do think that coach needs to do something with Wentz. Wentz is only good for about four or five quality throws in a game. So move him around, even if it exposes him to danger, and at least he can be kind of an average NFL quarterback, because he is capable also of making perfect throws. Like he has like one of those a game. Three or four more quality ones, and the rest bad decisions, bad executions. But at least when he's moving on, when he's throwing on the move, he's hit the best version of himself.
Yeah, look, I agree. He definitely has to be a guy that's on the move, out of the pocket, move the pocket plays. The thing that I talked about earlier about just confidence in general, as a football player, when you lose the confidence to throw the ball down the field, things start to move a little bit quicker. You're not confident that, hey, I don't know if I can get this ball in that window. And you're paying him like he is the guy that you're going to have out there. So I don't think that you can go any other direction than keep him in the game, keep him there. He's got to go through the bumps and the bruises. And hopefully, he can go out there, regain some confidence, have the confidence of his teammates and his receivers, and go out there and produce. Because we've seen it in the past. We've seen him produce. We've seen him make throws. We've seen him move around in the pocket and scramble. But we've also seen him tear his ACL, have back problems, not be consistent, throw errant throws. So he has to get back to the confidence levels of where he was at when he was winning a lot of football games and running around and making plays with his legs. So I think he can do it. I really do. But it's going to – I mean, he doesn't have time. He's got to do it now. And that's why I say it's a must-win.
On the other hand, that Bears quarterback sure came through when they needed him to, didn't they? They're looking pretty good right now. They kept the wrong guy.
I want to talk about the bumps and bruises, because speaking of those, and we don't have to break down this game or talk about this in depth, but Adam Schefter is reporting that, according to sources, that there is a presumptive positive player test among the Jets. So now all players and coaches from their organization has been sent home. So now the Cardinals are like, what do we do? They're supposed to fly in for Sunday's game.
A serious portion and then a fun portion. Here's the serious portion. Whoever tested positive, we wish them nothing but the best. We hope they get healthy, and we hope no one else gets infected and all of that stuff. That's from a human perspective, health-wise. Rob, Max, Charlie, let's make sure we throw that serious element out of the way. Now let's get to the fun part about football. Congratulations to the New York Jets for getting days off, because God knows nobody wants to see y'all. This is an awful team. This is an awful team led by an awful coach who never should have had the job to begin with. And as far as I'm concerned, this stuff, I mean, it's almost like a break because you don't get to watch them. Rob, help me out here. The Jets are awful. Awful. I mean, it's getting to the point now, Rob. You're watching guys. I don't even know, Max and Rob, if it's fair to judge the talent. I think they have zero faith in their coach. I think they've watched the quarterback regress. And I think right now when you look at the Jets, you literally are looking at guys that don't want to play. And it doesn't – I mean, it has very little to do with the pandemic. They don't believe in their coach. That's what I'm seeing, Rob. What about you?
Stephen A., let me just say, like, look, I 100% agree. They need to get that head coach out of there. They need to give Greg Williams a chance, because we saw Greg Williams come in Cleveland and get the respect and have the respect of his team to go out there and at least put some effort out there, put some effort on the field. I want to see some effort. You're not out there, like, right now, it looks like just guys are out there like, hey, can I get paid this week? Because I'm going to go home and I just want to get paid.
So Greg Williams should have been the coach.
I'll say this, guys.
Yes, 100%.
Thank God in New York for the New York Yankees. Go Gerrit Cole. Because the question is, who's the worst football team in New York? That is unclear.
It's unclear.
I mean, you can't imagine
how bad it is.
The Knicks are a joke. We'll wait for the Nets to get healthy next year. But thank God for the New York Yankees. Go Gerrit Cole.
That's what I have to say about this Jets news. I don't think Max has ever been more right. We can't figure out
who the hell
the worst team in New York is. They're all awful. Let me tell you something right now. Le'Veon Bell, he ain't this bad. Their receivers, they ain't that bad. Their defense is. Greg Williams did a hell of a job in Cleveland. He deserved to be the head coach. It's a damn shame that he is not the head coach. Adam Gase is awful. He never deserved the job. And now we're looking at this team. They need to get – yeah, that's right. He was high, Rob. I said it, Rob. He was high, that press conference. Gase said it. He looked high. He looked totally zooted out. I mean, Cat Williams would have been proud of him. He looked that
awful.
But this man, he's got to go.
There's no reason for him to be the head coach in New York.
None.
By the way, you're right. There are two different issues. COVID, serious. Let's not joke about that. Hope everyone gets better and it doesn't spread. And then the other side of this is, if the Jets did something that put them in danger of forfeiting the game, they'd still have a better chance to win than if they actually played the game. They'd have a better chance to win risking
Jets
a forfeit than actually playing the game.
Well, we're still
Jets
waiting to see if this game is
happy,
even
Charlie.
Going to happen.
Jets fans should be happy. They're not getting robbed of their money.
Well, they're Jets fans for a reason. They're very loyal. They don't care what the team does, clearly, because they still remain Jets fans. Because we don't even know if this game is going to be played, because right now the Cardinals don't even know if they should get on a plane to head out to New York because of this presumptive positive test.
Charlie, I'm here in California. Max Kellerman knows my boy Jeff Brown, my high school buddy.
Fair.
I mean, he and I got in an argument. I don't even know if we're talking right now because I'm the godfather to his son, and he's got his son being a Jets fan. I think that's cruel and unusual punishment.
Fair is a place they judge pigs.
Jeff Brown's got my godson Nicholas as a Jets fan. How could you do that to a child?
How could you subject a child
to that kind of cruelty?
There are lots of teams that I feel sorry for kids growing up, you know, under their
Jets
fanship.
Jets are awful.
Right now they're seeming to turn things around, but the Browns, would you want to be a Browns fan? I don't know about that. I don't even like their colors, but I want to ask you the question, Stephen A. Do you believe in the Browns? They're going to be playing the Colts. Both teams are 3-1 this weekend.
I don't believe in the Browns because I don't believe in Baker Mayfield, and I'm not saying that he's a scrub. I know that Baker Mayfield's got moxie and he could play. It's just that I got to see – you got Chubb and you got Kareem Hunt. I got to see you do something as a guy throwing that damn football to Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry on a consistent basis before I'm able to believe in Baker Mayfield. Right now it's Kevin Stefanski saving Baker Mayfield instead of Baker Mayfield flourishing.
Yeah, I would say the Browns are a talented team that's been lucky with the schedule a little bit and looks like an 8-8-ish team to me, and the Colts are an actually good team. But if the Browns can beat the Colts, we have to reevaluate.
Rob, real quick, we only got a few seconds.
Yeah, okay, so look, who have they played? Bengals, Washington, and how about them Cowboys? I'm just telling you, they ain't played nobody.
I love it, Rob. That's the way to end the show. I love that.
By the way, we did ask a poll question. We asked if Tom Brady was to blame for the Bucs loss. 60% said yes, he was. So he's taking that heat. And speaking of taking the heat, guys, on Monday when the show returns, there very well could be a new NBA champion. So we'll see you on Monday. Everyone have a great weekend.
Congratulations, Lakers, in advance.
Yes.